When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army retired. CBS News, Dickinson College, CEO of Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy, NATO. Jeff is also a veteran of NATO in addition to being a veteran artilleryman. And NATO is now challenged with a concept of rescuing or liberating or escorting, choose your verb, the grain fleet that's blockaded along the ports of Ukraine. The world needs the grain. The price is reflected at the grocery store across the world. And the shortage of food started weeks ago in the Horn of Africa is now spreading across the Indian Ocean basin. People can substitute rice, but that puts pressure on the supply chain. In any event, some nations are already beggared by the lack of fuel oil and the price of oil. So the grain fleet is needed. But what is to be done? There is talk. There are op-eds. There are distinguished speakers recommending the NATO action into the Black Sea with warships and ability to demine the harbors to bring the grain fleet out. Jeff, this looks like a Hollywood version of fighting the empire. Is this something that's credible? And would it not immediately bring thoughts of a wider war if there's a gun battle in the Black Sea?
Well, certainly, I guess it's credible, John. We hear a lot of voices recommending this particular course of action. I mean, certainly, you could say NATO, in the aggregate, has sufficient naval forces to try an operation like this. That being said, I think it's very, very unlikely for a number of reasons. First of all, to me, it's a metaphor for the no-fly zone. The United States, NATO resisted putting in a no-fly zone over Ukrainian airspace because of the concern of a potential confrontation between a NATO-U.S. aircraft and a Russian aircraft that might then bring escalation and a direct confrontation between Washington and Moscow. If we're unwilling to do that, I find it difficult to believe NATO leaders would vote to bring in the NATO fleet to have a direct confrontation potentially in the Black Sea between NATO warships and Russian warships. This would also, of course, demand full cooperation by all NATO forces. It'd be a NATO operation, therefore you've got to get unanimity. And the Turks would play an enormous role. President Erdogan has closed down the straits to more entry by Russian warships. Would he cooperate and become a direct protagonist by encouraging or facilitating the passage of a large NATO force into the Black Sea? Now, General Milley, gentleman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, was asked about this and quickly pointed out that we NATO, have large-scale naval forces currently operating in the Black Sea that could do that operation without being reinforced. I do know the United States, I believe, still has a carrier battle group that's operating in the Eastern Mediterranean along with other NATO forces. So there are NATO ships in the area, but I just think for the reasons of fear of escalation, this is unlikely to occur. And I think as well, as you suggested, John, this operation is a lot more complex than many imagine. It's not just going in there and escorting these ships out. There's a huge demining operation that would have to occur prior to any of those vessels being moving. Even if you were able to create a corridor whereby they could do so safely and not be threatened by the Russian Black Sea fleet.
NATO also, Jeff, has been making remarks about the Russians violating an agreement some years past, that NATO would not base sizable military forces along the Russian NATO frontier, which at one point would have included the Baltic states, Poland, into the Black Sea basin. However, NATO, I believe I read, is saying that the Russians violated this agreement and therefore in future, then NATO will staff and deploy on its best circumstances. Is this something that changes the posture of NATO to put troops and to put weapon systems and tripwires along the Polish frontier or the Baltic state frontier?
Yeah, it seems clear in the aftermath of this crisis, whenever it comes to a conclusion, you're going to see more NATO and U.S. forces present on the territory of the so-called frontline states, those states which now may include Finland, if they are admitted to NATO, that border the Russian Federation, to make sure that we deter a Russian advance against those NATO partners and also reassure them that we stand behind them. Clearly, I think everyone would agree the Russians have violated a whole series of agreements that really were the foundation for the European security architecture in the aftermath of the Cold War. The CFE Treaty, Conventional Forces Europe Treaty, which reduced thousands and thousands of tanks, artillery, armored troop carriers, combat helicopters, etc., on both sides, and accepted restrictions on the stationing without advance notification of those forces on those territories. Clearly, they violated that. There's another agreement called the Vienna Document, which is under the Organization for Security Cooperation in Europe, which requires signatories to pre-announce the movement of military forces. Russians have obviously violated that. And they also violated, clearly, the NATO-Russia Founding Act, which was, if you will, an effort to try to create an architecture in the aftermath of the Cold War that would provide peace in Europe in the aftermath. So, John, what we've really done is taken the security architecture of Europe, Mr. Putin has, and basically trashed it. And whatever comes out of this conflict, a whole new security architecture is going to have to be created to provide some level of stability and peace into the future.
So the map is now completely new. Is that my understanding? And that this map is going to dictate other changes that need to be made, because that's that you would have to say Poland sticks out there kind of obviously at risk. And there's talk, just talk, fog of war, disinformation talk in Moscow that Poland plans to take a piece of Ukraine in the event of fill in the blank. It's just talk, Jeff, but that's how Moscow gets things done. It makes stories up and then it pitches them to the Russian people and claims they're defending themselves.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, they attempt at all times and all their propaganda. Mr. Putin did this in an almost surreal fashion during his 7 May Victory Day speech,
right,
that Moscow is actually a victim. And this is for domestic consumption in the Russian Federation, that they are being threatened. This is what this is all about. And then tying that, of course, to the sacrifice that resulted in the death of 26 million members of the Soviet Union in the Great Patriotic War. So that's the narrative. And this is just an effort to continue that narrative. There are some suggestions, John, as you can trust polls, that support for this war in Russia is dwindling about 5 to 10% per week.
Right.
And it began to dwindle even more rapidly, I am told, in the aftermath of that particular speech. There are also more reports of economic challenges in Russia, small shops closing, et cetera, as the economic sanctions bite. So clearly we're going to hear more of this type of talk by the Russians for bluster on the one hand, but also to try to maintain domestic support for this war.
I mention it, Jeff, not because I'm trying to be alarmist, but because this provides the scale of propaganda that would be appropriate towards a NATO conflict. In other words, the remarks by Mr. Putin and his counselors for weeks have been that they're under attack by NATO, not by Ukraine, that the reason they attacked Ukraine was because they were cutting off what they knew to be an imminent NATO attack. You recall that story. Well, they still tell that story. And telling that story about Poland would be another way of talking about being attacked by NATO. And we also know that Poland is not going to take to being bandied about in Moscow. Poland has a motive to make it very clear to Moscow, you cross our frontier, we're coming for you. We've got 30 seconds, Jeff. Are we ready to be alarmed by Moscow changing this story from Ukraine to Poland?
We better be, John, because certainly you're right, you're going to hear more of that narrative. This may be an effort also to stimulate Belarus, that shares a border with the Poles. And we both know, John, of a long and somewhat sad history between Poland and Russia.
Yes.
The Poles remember the killing, for example, of Polish officers in the Katyn Forest during World War II that has left a cultural, historical divide between Poland and Russia. And to many Poles, I think this is just the latest chapter.
Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS News. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.